south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
And we're back. Another day, another shoe. Man, I tell you, the things you learn along the way when you're researching stuff are just, you know... generally curious and or into the lost art of reading books. By the way, what's the last real book that you read? In my survey, audiobooks don't count. Why? Well, not that audiobooks don't have value. The thing is, it takes effort to actually sit down and read a book, whereas you could listen to an audiobook anywhere. So, again, what was the last book you read and how long ago was it? Actually, if you tell me the last three books that you read, it gives me a pretty good idea what you're like. Anyway, the other day I was talking to a Latina, an educated Latina doctor, MD. She told me she only has a few gringo expat patients, but they're so opinionated and smart. She said they often know more about the diseases they're discussing and health in general than any of her Latino patients. Which is a good thing, a very good thing, right? Means we're curious and like to investigate things. So anyway, we discussed gringo expats for a while. Well, you know what? I had to agree. I'd say they're much more opinionated than the average person you might meet in a Starbucks or a coffee shop up in the States. And like she said, 10 times more curious and informed than your average Latino patient. Though you also meet lots of gringos who are opinionated and never will budge in their opinions. A lot of them stuck in that opinionated groove where you just know that no matter how many facts you present them with, facts that should turn the apple cart over on their beliefs. They're just not having it. They're not hearing you. In fact, just a couple days ago, I ran into my buddy, former corrupt cop Bob. He was sitting with two other gringo expats who I had known just a little bit. Retired guys living here in Latin America. And one of them, a retired former FBI agent, who in spite of that happens to be a really nice guy. But really, even though he got the hell out of Dodge, he's got a plan B, he's sort of only half informed. Opinionated as hell, though, like most expats are. But at least he's down here, got the hell out of Dodge. That's more than I could say for probably 95% of you guys up in the States listening to this right now. By the way, how is your plan B coming? Anyway, as I walked up to these guys, I was doing a little power walking, and I saw them hanging out in coffee clutching at one of their favorite outdoor cafes. I walked up just as the former FBI guy was saying to Bob and the other guy, "You know, if the word comes down from the States that we got to get another jab, I ain't taking it. Are you?" And Bob said, "No." Then he looked at me and said, "How about you, Johnny? You wouldn't take another round of jabs, would you?" I said, "Mike, are you kidding? I'm unvaxxed, man. I never took any of the other ones." He said, "Oh, yeah, that's right. I remember. How'd you get so smart when everyone else was panicking?" I said, "Mike, come on. There's just so much stuff leaking out now as to how many huge mistakes were made during that whole COVID-iot shitstorm. Starting with the masks, I still see the occasional idiot walking around with a mask." I said, "Mike, to me, it's an IQ test." We all see the occasional idiot every day with a mask on, even with all the studies coming out over the last year or so, proving that masks not only didn't work, they caused a lot of damage and respiratory problems themselves. Then Mike said, "Oh, really? Is that right?" "Yeah, and what about the Great Barrington Declaration?" "That doesn't shake people up who believe that idiot falsies lies." And at that point, all three of those guys gave me that quizzical look. They'd never heard of it. You know, the Great Barrington Declaration? Mike said, "What's that?" And then I had to explain it to him. It's a formal, multi-page declaration. You can look it up on the internet. It's called the Great Barrington Declaration, signed by thousands of infectious disease epidemiologists and public health scientists who completely disagree with the government's COVID-19 policies, including lockdowns, masks, jabs, and social distancing. And when I told them that over 15,000 medical and public health scientists have signed it, and 50,000 doctors, medical practitioners, He gave me that surprised look again and said, "Come on, really?" I said, "Go ahead. You got your phone open. Look it up." They did, and they were shocked. Then Mike said, "Wow, how come we didn't know about this?" And I said, "Because Google and Facebook and Twitter, before Musk owned it, quietly censors shit like that. Think big government and big pharma, their largest funding source, wants you to find out about that?" So anyway, 2 years after the fact, those three gringos learned something that day, and so did I. I always sort of took it for granted that intelligent gringos and expats down here on their plan B, people who got the hell out of Dodge because they know the U.S. and the whole system up there is imploding. I sort of figured most, if not all of them, were on the same page as we are regarding the COVIDian thing. But they're not. There are plenty of gringos and expats down here in Latin America on their plan B mission who still believe that Big Brother propaganda, or at least they give it some credence and buy into some, if not most of it. And some, believe it or not, are still diehard Dr. Fauci ass lickers. And some, like those retired expats I was talking to 2 days ago, are just uninformed. The thing is, I've realized over the years, a lot of them came down here not to escape the Orwellian state, like so many more recent new expats are doing. Turns out a lot of gringos and expats who've been down here for some years came down way before the Big Brother state really kicked in and wokeism took hold. They came down for less controversial reasons. They came because it was cheaper, warmer, their pension and social security dough goes a lot farther, and especially for divorced gringos and expats, they heard the rumor or discovered for themselves that Latinas love gringos of all ages. They even loved decrepit old gringos who thought their romantic mating and dating love life was long over. I know, when we're talking about love here, it might not be romantic love. Love comes in lots of different forms, right? But ladies of all ages here in Latin America appreciate, sometimes love, what your social and economic status can potentially do for them. I know, it sounds crude to say that, breaking things like romance and love down to dollars and cents, but lots of people do that. Do remember, the average person here in Latin America, Latino or Latina, is living on $400 or $500 a month. That means a gringo expat coming down here living on a measly $1,500 a month social security check looks a lot like a guy in the States making 100 G's a year to a girl in the States making only 30 or 35K. By the way, I was quite curious when I first met FBI Mike a couple years back. I thought, why would an FBI guy with the big pension that he has, he told me what it is, and it's pretty big, why would a guy like him get the hell out of Dodge and have a plan B in Latin America? After all, you'd think an FBI guy would be stamped in a certain mold. You'd think he'd be one of the biggest hardcore flag-waving America love-it-or-leave-it patriots on the planet. Well, turns out he said for the first 20 years in the FBI he was an America love-it-or-leave-it super patriot. He was stationed in the States during that time. Then he got stationed at the embassy in Puerto Rico, did a stint at the embassy in the DR, and the embassy in Colombia. And after being exposed thoroughly to the gringo advantage and how gringos and expats live in Latin America, he said soon enough, patriotism took a back seat to lifestyle. It beats living in the States hands down. So there you have it, in case you were wondering why an ex-FBI agent would get the hell out of Dodge permanently and have a plan B in Latin America. Speaking of odd things you learn along the way, especially if you're curious and read across all genres, you know the name Nobel, right? Did you know that in April 1888, French newspapers incorrectly reported Alfred Nobel's death? He was alive and well. Alfred then read his own obituary, which was a scathing critique of his life and work. The obituary named Alfred Nobel as a merchant of death, because he invented dynamite, and declared that his invention, dynamite, killed more people faster than any other method previously devised by man. Well, as it turns out, Alfred was so disturbed at reading this in his obituary. He was so disturbed that his legacy would be that of a merchant of death, that he changed his last will and testament to bequeath his entire fortune to a new philanthropic foundation that would award a series of yearly Nobel Prizes to those who during the preceding year shall have conferred the greatest benefit on mankind. So, Nobel's sterling legacy held up for over 100 years. That's how I view it anyway. That is, until the Nobel Committee gave out the Peace Prize to that piece of shit, corrupt fraud known as Barack Obama. And again, I mean that in the kindest, most Christian kind of way. All right, let's take a quick email. This is from Dave, number 16. He says, "Dear Johnny, I'm Dave, number 16, or maybe 17 or 18, from what you might call your low-income contingent of listeners. I'm a substitute teacher in Boulder, Colorado, looking to get the hell out soon. It's a terrible job. But I've got plenty of work because so many teachers are exhausted and burnt out. They're taking all the sick and mental health days that they can, and that's where I come in. Never a day goes by where I don't have a choice of various public schools to show up at and sub. He says my goal now and the upcoming school year in January is to get a job at one of those private helicopter schools in Latin America. There are, by the way, various internet sites that will hook you up. I'm negotiating right now for such a position in El Salvador and or Panama. Though a teaching job in Guatemala would be nice too. Anyway, I've been to Latin America various times backpacking for months on end. So I know how to live cheap and under the radar. I know, Johnny, it's not your style of traveling or living, not what you preach, but you really can live and survive quite well in Latin America on $20 a day. Of course, you will be sharing bathrooms at hostels and seeing other people's hairballs and all. But if you're any kind of backpacker, you get used to that. Anyway, Johnny, the reason why I'm writing today is because I hear you talk a lot about the things that aggravate you and your listeners who travel in Latin America. You know, us backpackers have a very high tolerance level. We have a very thick skin. What might aggravate others, we just overlook. It's the price we have to pay for living and traveling on the cheap, though we don't just brush everything off. For me, and it's something I don't think you've spoken about, is the fact that if you know lots of middle and lower middle class people and get invited to their houses or to parties to celebrate with their families, there's one common thing that sort of drives me nuts every time I go and use one of their bathrooms. When I see a toilet seat that's so used, the paint is actually worn through to the wood below it. That, for me, even a seasoned backpacker, is gross. Basically, Johnny, I'm talking about toilet seats that are light years past their expiration dates, that should have been tossed in the dumpster years ago. Again, beggars can't be choosers, but nevertheless, I just don't want to be reminded how many thousands of sittings it must have taken to wear the paint clean off a toilet seat. I'll tell you, Johnny, if that doesn't make you pee shy, I don't know what will. Then Dave says, I have a pretty good friend in Panama. I've stayed at his house a few times. One of those middle-class houses, Latin style, which does not fit the description of middle class in the States, as you've mentioned. He's got three generations of family members living there. That's pretty common in Latin America. Johnny, over the years, I've stayed there weeks at a time. In that house, there's one bathroom. It's got a blue toilet seat that's worn right down to the wood. You know how old a toilet seat has to be if it's made out of wood and painted? Everything's plastic these days. They must have phased out wood 30 years ago. And every time I walked into that bathroom, I was thinking, I'm going to go down to the hardware store and buy a new toilet seat for this family. My conscience tells me, maybe that's not such a good idea. I wonder, what will the family think? That I'm too good for their toilet seat? Would that be an insult to their hospitality? Yes, Johnny, those are the kind of thoughts that go through my head. I'm thinking, if I buy him a seat, I'm doing him a big favor, though I'm really doing myself a favor, so I'm deluded, right? Would they take it wrong? Would I be insulting them in the process? That's the conflict I have in my mind. I just don't know. Latinos, especially poor Latinos, are proud of what little they have. They might be even more proud than most gringos and expats I know, though their priorities in hygiene can be very much different than ours. For example, that particular family, last time I came to visit, my friend and his mother pointed out they had a new sofa. They had a new sofa, all right, but when I went into the bathroom, same old threadbare blue toilet seat. As far as me buying them a toilet seat, Johnny, I never quite gave up on the idea. I really did go so far as to check out toilet seats at the local hardware store. The cheap plastic ones at $8 were just fine. Then funny thoughts came into my head. I thought, if I buy them a toilet seat, I'm sure as hell not going to be the one to install it. Nope, I'm not going to be the guy to get on my knees and stick my hands up under the back of that thing and undo those rusty nuts and the light. Anyway, Johnny, I think I've rambled on way too much on the subject. What do you think? Signed, Dave number 16, 17, whatever. Ah, Dave, thanks for that. You know, I've been there all right many times. I can even at this very moment picture a powder blue toilet seat that's way beyond its expiration date. It's in my girlfriend's mother's house, powder blue, a very ugly and popular color for toilet seats down here. Dave, I'm with you. I'm not gonna get on my knees in front of that thing, stick my hands up around the back and remove those bolts and nuts. So then how do I deal with it when I get an invite over? I just make as few trips to the bathroom as humanly possible. By the way, I remember when I first moved out of my parents' house when I was maybe 21 years old. I remember my mother saying, the first thing you do when you move into an existing house or a rental apartment, change the locks and change the toilet seats. And she didn't mean bring along the toilet seats from your old place. She meant buy new. Oh, and Dave, I have noticed that some families here in Latin America have made an effort to upgrade that toilet seat. I've noticed that some people, not many, but some people, they don't get a new toilet seat. They just paint over the old one. You could tell by the brush strokes. A for effort, how about a C or a D plus? All right, moving on. How about this email from Richard? He says, Johnny, on June 18th, 2021, about 2 years ago, you wrote on the subject of cars that are hybrids. You said in 3 years, Johnny, I believe hybrids won't be around anymore. They hardly make sense now and will go the way of the dodo and flex fuel vehicles. That's right, Richard. I said in a few years, if you have a hybrid vehicle, it will be impossible to sell. No one will bite. Turns out Richard sent this to me, my famous last words about hybrids, along with two links to some car and driver stuff saying how great hybrids are. Well, Richard, I still stand by that. Though maybe I was off with the 3 years. I'm telling you, very soon, you will find it impossible to sell your car if it's a hybrid. Almost all my engineering buddies agree with me on that one, too. Why? Because as the world slowly ramps up to go total electric, and since electric is 2 to 3 times more economical, in other words, about a third as expensive as gasoline to go the same distance, that means if you've got a hybrid motor, let's say a Toyota RAV4 hybrid, which, by the way, are around $5,000 more than the pure gasoline version. So anyway, if you power it up using electricity, it's about 2/3 cheaper than powering up the gas engine. Oh, and since it's got 2 different fuel and power sources, electric and gas, it's much more complicated, many more things to go wrong, than a pure electric or gasoline engine car. On top of that, as more electrics get phased in, there'll be fewer gasoline mechanics. And by the way, since there's limited space under the hood of any car, and limited space around the frame and wheel wells, too, it stands to reason that hybrids have a scaled-down version of the electric plant and a much smaller battery pack than a pure electric car would. Now, let's take, for example, the Toyota RAV4 hybrid Richard has in one of his links. Did you know that the electric driving option only has a range of 40 miles? That's like a tenth of the range of an equivalent all-electric car. To me, it's ridiculous to buy a car like that. Come on. A 40-mile range when going all electric? That's like a kiddie car or a golf cart. Hey, you decide, but just remember, a few years back when those so-called flex fuel vehicles came out, you know, the ones that could run on alcohol and gas, how'd that turn out? Well, I still see cars and a lot of SUVs out there that've got that flex fuel sticker on them, but no one these days thinks it ever was a good idea. In fact, almost every engineering buddy of mine to a man says it was a complete bust, a technology that never caught on and never should have been attempted. Well, that's my prediction and many of my engineering friends' prediction for hybrid vehicles. Now, if you got one, all right, you got one. Enjoy it while you have it. But definitely don't count on it holding its resale value. Hey, I'm not the answer man, but remember, in a past life, I was an actual engineer, so you might want to trust me more than you trust those guys and gals who are just journalists writing for car and driver rags, who never took a fluid power or thermodynamics, solid-state electronics, or power mechanics class in their lives. Again, just saying. All right, here's an interesting statistic. According to a study by the Network of Developmental Financial Institutions, whatever that is, 65% of Latin American businesses do not have taxpayer registration numbers, meaning they pay no tax other than the usual VAT taxes, which everyone pays. You know, it depends what country you're in. Some it's 10%, some 12%, some 15%. You usually know the first time you go into a restaurant in any Latin American country, it says right on the slip, on the factura, IVA, which is VAT tax. Anyway, this article says, in addition to lacking taxpayer IDs, 65% of small businesses do not even have bank accounts. They run on cash. So think about it. Those are little mom and pop outfits and vendors in the street who are completely off the books. So how is this CBDC, you know, these proposed central bank digital currencies, how are they ever going to be implemented in Latin America or any third world country? With 65% of small businesses running on a cash-only basis. Now, of course, toxic organizations like the Fed and the World Economic Forum are going to be able to push it on first-world countries, but down here in the third world, uh-uh. It'll be just impossible to get the local businesses on board. Not when they're not even up to snuff on credit card transactions yet. Now, of course, down here in the third world, government hacks will say that countries are not collecting their badly needed tax revenue, so they're chomping at the bit to go after that 65%. While small business owners will say, well, screw you, government. You don't give us shit for the VAT tax we've been paying on every purchase since the beginning of time. So why should we go on the books and pay you more and get nothing for that either? So then government hacks will have this retort. They'll say that small businesses that are not on the books won't have their people covered by our labor laws, and they won't be contributing to national Social Security and our national healthcare system. All of which, by the way, are completely broke, completely suck, and are completely corrupt. Now, where have we heard that before? Oh, and government hacks will say, look, you've got to get your small business on the books. That's a way to formalize and upgrade your standard of living. Meanwhile, the small business guy off the books will say to the government hack, maybe I should upgrade my standard of living by working as a government parasite like you. But I don't have any family connections, so I guess that's out of the question. Meanwhile, government hacks will say that people working informally that don't pay taxes, that hurts education, public health, and a variety of social programs that assist poor families. Now, poor families, when hearing that rhetoric, will say, what assistance do you give poor families? Show me, because I ain't seen it yet. Why should I put my business on the tax rolls so you could take a piece of that and I get nothing in return? Then the government hacks will say, but there's a trickle-down effect with your taxes that affects public services critical to improving the lives of you and your family. And the people working off the books hearing this will say, show me. From what I can see, you're full of shit. Oh, and regarding that central bank digital currency, CBDC, everyone's talking about, that's soon to be implemented in the first world. You know, Latin American government hacks have heard about it, and they're chomping at the bit. They figure it's a great way to finally tax the informal economy. They're trying to work up propaganda plans, starting with the major banks, pointing out to the sweaty masses that going to a CBDC, the establishment of a digital monetary system, and using digital wallets would modernize businesses and offer financial practices for millions. Yep, that's the propaganda. That's the ploy. The thing is, though, I've talked to many average Latin Americans and they don't know what the hell a CBDC is. They got no idea. And even though it would be at first rolled out just for purchases and would not put businesses on the tax rolls directly, the fact is the average Latino who's off the books and uses cash does not want to join up with the system. So, bottom line, with 65% of small businesses not on the books, not paying taxes, not registered with the government, and most of them harboring severe mistrust of their government, they already see how the government steals 10, 15, or 20% value-added tax from them, and they see they get nothing for their money. So there's apprehension and resistance to any government promises. So for all you guys and gals out there, you gonna-bes and wannabes thinking, if you really have a plan B and are set on getting the hell out of Dodge, by settling into Latin America, might you be jumping from the frying pan into the fire? Well, as far as the CBDC, that is, Latin American countries instituting central bank digital currency, I just cannot see how they'll ever pull it off. Not when most small businesses and the poor haven't even progressed to credit cards or having a bank account yet. Think of it. As for credit cards, we're talking about a 30 to 50 year lag time. And a huge percentage of the population is not even there yet. So then what do you think the lag time is going to be on a central bank digital currency? My prediction, for what it's worth, in the next couple of years, you guys up in the States are sure to get it, even if states like Florida and Texas try to outlaw it through legislation. The steamroller's coming and you will have central bank digital currency within the next couple of years. But third world countries,
even if they try to roll it out. There'll be nothing but chaos and disaster. Remember, a few years back, India tried to roll out an all-digital currency. And within a month, there was so much chaos, they nixed the plan completely. Speaking of cash, let's talk about counterfeit cash here in Latin America. It turns out the most counterfeited bills are U.S. 100s, 50s, and 20s, with the hardest part of counterfeiting by far getting the right paper. Well, it turns out counterfeiters in Latin America have that licked. They take Venezuelan 100 Bolivar bills, which are worth many hundreds of times less than 1 cent. They subject them to a chemical bleaching process that lasts 1 to 3 days. They end up as pure white blank pieces of paper, then placed in a lithographic offset press. Most importantly, they have the feel and texture of real U.S. dollars because the Venezuelan 100 Bolivar note uses the same kind of paper. According to the FBI, 30% of all the counterfeit dollars circulating around the world come from Colombia, with 17% of all counterfeit bills coming from Peru. In fact, one Peruvian counterfeiter who was caught and interviewed in 2020 says his organization could produce $6 million in U.S. currency in 45 days. Then they're sold in bulk to Colombian cartels for 10 cents on the dollar. By the way, in order to get the watermark, the 3D security ribbon, and security threads correct in the counterfeit notes, the bills are passed through a laser printer after they go through the offset press. When it says the major destinations for these counterfeit dollars, Mexico, because there are billions of dollars coming into that country every year as remesas. Therefore, paying with dollars is common. People are used to it. Those counterfeits are also sent to Ecuador, whose currency is the dollar, and Panama, whose currency also is the dollar, and Argentina, where the dollar is much preferred over the peso, which has had 100% inflation over the last few years. And finally, Venezuela, which is a de facto dollarized country. By the way, many counterfeit bills are so good, the average person can't tell the difference. So millions a day are passed through local street vendors. Of course, larger stores, banks, and franchises have the right scanning devices and are able to tell the difference. By the way, it seems like every small mom and pop tienda or business has a few counterfeits taped to the register or display case. And those fakes are almost always produced by unsophisticated counterfeiters using an inkjet printer on white bond paper. So even for the uninitiated, they just don't feel right to the touch.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own Plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your Plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.